ओम अज्ञातिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जलशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। ओके, एनीवन हैज एनी क्वेश्चन? Nidhika, did you get the reference?
No, as of right now, I don't have any question.
No, did you get the reference?
No, I still haven't got it. Even Sundar Chaitanya Prabhu, he said he just from Gauram Prabhu's one class. So, but he doesn't remember which year or anything of that sort. But he said that he can try to find out about it, I'm not sure whether
even
he'll get it or what.
Okay. Yeah, even I would want that reference because probably, you know, I'll be giving a seminar on Bhagavatam set distribution in Gopinath Temple.
Okay.
It's a 3-session seminar.
Okay.
So, then? it is in process. And I have to just discuss certain things and it has to be finalized. So I'll be meeting devotees in Chopadi. And so, you know, I can add that reference also in one of the glorification of Prabhupada.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Once I get it, I will share it with you if I get it.
Okay. And I request the devotees who are in Bombay, you know, if there is a seminar, then this would be my first seminar probably in the temple. So it would be really be nice, and if you know, all our devotee friends can participate and encourage me for that. So it will be a good experience. Anyways, but it has not been finalized yet. Probably next week after Balram Jayanti, I might visit and something can be finalized, hopefully. Okay. Yeah, so I saw Swati Mataji, your references, you know, it was really good. I think you have quoted a lot of references. And Mirika also, she has quoted a lot of references. So I think with time, devotees are submitting their assignment. And hopefully by the end of this month, we should get from everyone. This is what my goal is. And then we can also assemble all the questions at one place. And then we all can actually contribute certain things about each and every question, if there is something more to be added in that. Yeah, okay. So, see, I wanted to share something, very interesting about how Prabhupada was actually dealing with his disciples. And there are many, many things that Prabhupada said, which will probably contradict what his general statements are. So I think, it's very important to know, first of all, each and every devotee should know what Prabhupada said about certain things, because Prabhupada did not say just one thing about a particular thing. You know, he had I think depending on circumstances, depending on the devotee with whom he is dealing, he gave multiple answers to that same doubt, question, or comment, or so it was really very, very interesting. So let me ask a question that generally, okay, so let's say, for example, if you are in a temple, if you are serving a leader in a temple, some authority in the temple, and if the authority is not able to chant 16 rounds, you know, even after initiation. So would you like to serve that authority? Would you want to serve that kind of authority? Like, what would be your concern? What would you think about that authority? Will you be comfortable? I think, Nirvika, you are the only one who can speak because Swati Mataji won't be able to speak. So,
why won't she be able to speak?
Huh?
Why won't she be able to speak?
Yeah, because she's in the house probably. So she won't be able to speak. I think she has some responsibilities also.
Okay.
Simultaneously. So, I'm assuming that, you know, because this is a regular thing. But obviously, if Swati Mataji would like to, you know, comment or something, then definitely she can. What do you think? How would you feel about it? And would you want to serve such an authority?
I think the main problem with this would be that he's not practicing what he's preaching, because ideally the leaders would say that you should chant your rounds and no matter what, and then do your service so that the service would be of good quality. But he's not setting the right example.
Okay. And what if he's, you know, like... he's working very hard for the, you know, he's like putting a lot of efforts and trying his best and, you know, he's rendering more service than others. It's just that, you know, he's like
I do remember that there was one incident in which there was one devotee who was working like extremely hard for, and Prabhupada, like, this was, I think, one of the most rare cases where he had said when some devotee had complained against him that he's not chanting his 16 rounds, but he's doing service. So Prabhupada had said that it's okay, he's doing work, so then it's okay if he's not able to chant up to 16 rounds. But he also put an important disclaimer after that this would not apply to each and everyone who's working very hard. This was a very rare kind of case which maybe Prabhupada felt it was right, it was okay for him.
Okay. I think probably I do remember. Probably you have heard the same thing what I've heard. But that devotee is Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu, who was a cook at Krishna Balaram Temple.
Uh-huh.
He was in
Vrindavan.
He was like serving the whole day, practically the whole day, and he was not able to chant 16. In that particular circumstance, Prabhupada said, you know, in that context, he said that even if he's not able to chant 16 down,
But then he had also said that this was not for anyone else, it was only for him.
I don't think he said like that this was only for him, but I think it is understood that it was applied to him only in that particular circumstance. But, you know, to our utter surprise, this is not the only devotee Prabhupada said that, you know, if he's unable to chant 16, that's fine. If you remember, you know, I posted one letter a few weeks ago. And this was to a Mataji, and I think that Mataji was pregnant. And so Prabhupada was actually, you know, telling her that in that letter he wrote to her that even if you are not able to chant 16 rounds, it's okay. But because you are doing, you know, your service and everything, you know, you continue that. Whatever you are doing, you know, give your best. And I mean, and he also said that if you can chant 16 rounds, that is really, you know, it's the best thing. But even if you are unable, don't think about it so much. Don't be disturbed by that. So now, someone may also say that, well, she was pregnant and probably because of that. But then there are pregnant Mataris, you know, Mataris with children also who are chanting 16 rounds, are able to manage so much. Anyways, but see, in both these cases, they are not the authorities. Right? So it might be personally applicable to them, but what about the leader or authority? Hare Krishna, Rajiv Prabhu, have you joined?
Hare Krishna, Prabhuji.
Hare Bol, Prabhu, where are you?
We are driving back from the temple, Prabhuji.
I was thinking the same thing. I was thinking that you will not reach before 9, but you will definitely connect while driving.
Yeah, surely. We are all here. Warrants or something like one.
Actually, I think Anju Mataji and Prabhuji are there, right? With you?
Yes.
And on, maybe you are talking about Unnati also.
Unnati is not here. Gaurang is here. Gaurang Prabhu, Neeraj Prabhuji's son. He is also with
okay,
us.
Okay. Hari Bol, Gaurang Prabhu, how are you?
I'm fine, Prabhuji. Hare Krishna.
Okay. Hare Krishna, yeah. So actually, you know, I was in the temple till 7, I think around 7:20. But then I had to leave because I had some other services here in the house. So I had to come back.
Okay.
And
we reached at about 8 o'clock, past 8 o'clock.
Yeah, I thought so, like, you know, probably, okay. But that was quite late, you know, I thought probably you guys will reach by 7:30 and then, you know, at least by 9:30 you'll be back home.
Okay. Tomorrow we might be coming again. So if you're there in the evening, we should come a little earlier tomorrow.
Tomorrow? Oh, you are coming again to Rajbhari?
Yeah. We want to come also.
Okay. Yeah, so let's see, you know, if we can meet up tomorrow. But anyways, but you know, one thing is there that you have to collect the Bhagavatam sets from Chopati.
Yeah, I do that, surely.
And second thing is that, you know, about our house program. Which is like, I think you have already mentioned, but what about Sanjeev Prabhu and Mataji?
Prabhuji, Sunday, okay. Prabhuji, they are saying if Sunday is more suited for them.
Okay, so I think for Nirvik also Sunday works. And for what about you both? Like, are you okay with Sunday?
We are okay with Sunday also. Sunday,
we can try to keep it early on Sunday. We can try to keep it like by 6. You know, if everyone can come on time, then we can wind up also early.
Early,
actually, 7 o'clock. Okay. Anyway, let's discuss that later. You know,
yeah, we'll maybe tomorrow, sure.
Okay, and what about the Neeraj Prabhu and family?
Unko puchunga Prabhuji. Tomorrow we'll get to speak to them. Sunday puchunga
unko. Okay. Theek hai. Okay, no problem. Yeah, so, you know, we were having a very interesting discussion, you know, because when I was in Canada, I was like hearing Prabhupada memories, you know, every day, almost every day I was hearing that. And you know, I got so many interesting points from Prabhupada's Leela. So one of the things that I was discussing, you know, I was asking question that what if you are, you know, serving under an authority who is not able to chant 16 rounds even after initiation. So would you be able to serve that authority? Would you be able to take inspiration? Would you be able to, you know, still connect with the authority?
Maybe after speaking to the authority, we will come to the depth, because there's also from interaction also we get to know how deep the person is. If there is some genuine reason that he cannot, the authority cannot chant as much, but yet preaches very passionately and all available time still devoting for Krishna consciousness, then maybe we have to be a little more tolerant. I would understand.
Okay. Yeah, so Nirvika was sharing one, you know, some example about, there was one Gopal disciple who was in Vrindavan. He was cooking for Krishna Balram, and he used to cook like the whole day, entire day. And because of that, obviously, you know, cooking is a very difficult service. You know, it requires a lot of physical effort. So after all that physical service, it's very difficult to be attentive while chanting, and or you know, you might get less time for chanting also. Because he was like right from Mangala Aarti to evening, you know, when the deities were put to rest, he was like the whole entire day he was like cooking for them. So then some devotees, you know, spoke to Prabhupada about it, and, you know, Prabhupada said that, you know, for him, you know, if he's not able to chant, that's all right. He does not have to chant 16 rounds. And he can just continue cooking for Krishna Balram.
So the only and then, only acceptable option is that if the person is still devoting all of their time for Krishna, then it becomes a solid case for...
Okay. We'll discuss that. We'll discuss that point also. Yeah, anyone is saying something, like, I think, who, Anju Matari or Angel Matari?
Anju.
Okay.
Yeah, Prabhuji, recently I heard in one of the lectures that Prabhupada wanted Gaur Govind Maharaj to translate Bhagavatam into Odia, right? So then when he reached Bhuvaneshwar one day, so he asked how are the things going on, and Gaur Govind Maharaj said that I don't get time, so I cannot translate. So then... I don't get time to translate.
Translate, okay. Yeah. Huh. Okay.
So then there was a devotee. So he was entering, he was a foreign devotee. He was just coming, and Prabhupada said that he will look after the temple, and then you get down to translation. So then Prabhupada said, okay. Then Prabhupada called that devotee, and he told him that now onwards you have to serve here. He said that I have a flight back tomorrow. Then he was basically from America somewhere, and so he said that he has flight tomorrow, so he has to go back. Then Prabhupada said, no, you have to stay here and you have to do this seva. You have to. Then he said, I have never managed any temple, so then, no, I will teach you how to manage. Then he gave so many excuses, four or five of them, and Prabhupada said everything for every excuse, Prabhupada had an answer. And then finally what he said is that Prabhupada, like he said that water doesn't suit him, the climate doesn't suit him, and all these things he said. Then finally he said that Prabhupada, if I am in the temple whole day, I won't be able to chant 16 rounds. Then Prabhupada said, if you are doing the service from right from 4, that is morning till night, then you will be exempted from that also. So this is what one case that I heard of, what Prabhupada said.
Okay. So, you are also giving another example of a devotee who is like completely engaged in service. And then because of that, he is not able to chant. And so Prabhupada is giving some kind of exception to that, okay? So we are seeing now, gradually, like Nirvita was quoting one example. Then I also gave another example of a devotee, Mataji. Prabhupada writes to a letter to her, which I posted in the group also. I don't know if you have read this. And then you also gave example of Gaur Govind Maharaj. So we see it's like now I think probably it's not an exceptional case. It is generally, I think, you know, I believe that, and obviously it all depends on the consciousness of the devotee also, how much absorption the devotee has for Krishna. That also depends, and obviously the spiritual master knows that. So for these kind of devotees, I think, you know, Prabhupada gave them that kind of exemption, that, you know, even if they are not able to chant 16 rounds, it's okay. See, that is the reason I will tell you that chanting, you know, as I said earlier also in the class, that chanting the holy name or service to the holy name, it's one and the same thing. There is no difference. So, and then, you know, like in couple of places, Prabhupada has mentioned that chanting is not just about chanting the holy name. It can also be different activities. It can be, you know, typewriting. It can be book distribution. It can be giving lectures also. You know, it's all non-different because you are all speaking about Krishna. All right. So we know there are examples of devotees, and obviously these examples that we are sharing here, it is not meant to mean that we should not, you know, chant 16 rounds, or it's not meant to encourage devotees to increase their service and, you know, focus less on chanting. It is not meant for that. We are just trying to understand Prabhupada's different, his dealing with different disciples in a different way. And then, you know, we'll reconcile all these points also, you know, because that is the most important. So whatever Prabhupada said, it has to be adjusted, you know, it has to be like understood according to the context. And then we have to reconcile these things. These are all the examples. In this particular case,
on the daily quotes of Srila Prabhupada, his today's quote itself, talking from philosophical point of view on Krishna consciousness, is also chanting.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So many places, like letters also, if you read Prabhupada's letters and, you know, in his purpose also, many places he has mentioned that Kirtan, it does not just mean chanting the holy name, but it also means, so all these examples that were given, it was not from the point of view of following some authority, right? So my question is that, okay, and I think Rajiv Prabhu has given a good answer, that, you know, it depends on the circumstances, you know, like it depends on how much the devotee is absorbed and, you know, how much he is conscious of the Lord. So yes, you know, so now this particular context, it did happen that one time, you know, there was one Prabhupada disciple, he was actually the temple president, and the devotees under him, so they got to know that he's, you know, not able to chant the 16 rounds, and so they all complained to Prabhupada, they went to Prabhupada, and they said that, you know, Prabhupada, how can he follow, you know, the temple president, because he's not able to chant. So I think it's best that we replace the temple president and some other devotee can take that position. Prabhupada said that Arjuna also did not chant. He was only fighting. He did not chant Krishna's name while fighting. He was just doing his duty. So similarly, this disciple is also, you know, and he was actually glorifying, in fact, he was glorifying that disciple, you know. So he was saying that, you know, this disciple is doing so much service, and he is so responsible, and he does his, you know, responsibility so nicely. He is a very good manager also. So Prabhupada is like, you know, glorifying this devotee, you know, instead of saying that, well, yeah, you know, he should be replaced and he has to chant the 16 rounds. Okay, so this is one context. And in another context, when Prabhupada came to know about the devotee who was not chanting 16 rounds and he was involved in management, Prabhupada said, what is the use of his management if he can't chant his 16 rounds, if he cannot finish his 16 rounds? So you see, you know, Prabhupada also, he actually, you know, apparently, like he said, contradictory statements in different circumstances. So, but it is actually not contradictory. You know, he knew the mood of the disciples, their consciousness and all that. So, so for one disciple, Prabhupada said like this.
That means it's a case to case. Prabhupada knew how to apply it.
Yeah, yeah.
Where the person is lacking or not.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think it does not mean now, it does not mean that one has to, you know, one should increase their service and decrease their chanting, you know, in the name of that, you know, just because Prabhupada supported certain cases. I think, you know, it all depends on the demand for a particular service at that time. So see, as like Anju Mataji was, you know, sharing example of Gaur Govind Maharaj, that for this, you know, for this particular time, it is more important that you translate. It is more important that you manage. Okay. So that was the need of the time. And accordingly, Prabhupada actually, he saw that. But consistently, if you see, in his lectures and, you know, his letters and everywhere in his teachings, he always emphasized that 16 rounds must be finished. 16 rounds should, in fact, okay, now there is one letter where Prabhupada writes that amongst all the instructions that I have given, the chanting of 16 rounds is the first and foremost for everyone. So that he mentions in one letter or maybe somewhere in his purport. Okay, so now what does that mean? So this is, so see, spiritual master will give general instructions for everyone to follow because he is Acharya, like Prabhupada is Acharya. So similarly, if we have our Guru and the Guru has many disciples, so he will also, he will also instruct, you know, generally for his disciples. But at the same time, for each and every disciple, he might also change that instruction at a particular time, depending on the circumstances. Okay, so although there are general instructions, now, you know, for example, so this instruction means that every disciple's duty is that they have to finish their 16 rounds unless and until Prabhupada personally tells them to change that order. Okay, so finally, what we understand from this scenario is that ultimately, the spiritual master is the authority, or the acharya is the authority for deciding what we have to do at what particular time. Okay, that is what is actually meant, because then otherwise it's very difficult to understand these things. You know, we will never understand because we are not connected with Krishna. Okay, we'll never know what Krishna is wanting from us. So Prabhupada is, you know, he was the one who was actually deciding and dictating what should be done at what particular time and how much emphasis should be given to that particular service. Now, one more thing. See, Prabhupada had given so much blessings and benedictions to the book distributors that time, you know, when they were distributing. So, and Prabhupada emphasized a lot also. Okay. But now later, what happened? You know, these book distributors, not necessarily that each and every one of them, they became very advanced, or they, you know, they are still in the movement. Many of them left also. Many of them actually had fallen down. So in spite of receiving Prabhupada's blessings and his benedictions, we see that they still had fallen down later. So then how do you understand this? Because, you know, so it basically means that Prabhupada, whatever instructions, so Prabhupada's instructions should be taken in a holistic way. So you cannot just pick up certain statements and, you know, think that, okay, I am following Prabhupada, you know, and I will be safe. No, Prabhupada actually, you know, his most important instructions are the, you know, the sadhana ones. If you, like, you know, Prabhupada in one letter, he says that if a deity will chant 16 rounds, then no power in the whole world can make him fall down. Okay, so whoever is chanting 16 rounds, they will always be protected by the Lord. This is Prabhupada's, you know, benediction for all the devotees. So, in any case, a devotee should, even if they break the regulative principles, but they should never stop chanting 16 rounds. That has to be there. You know, now those who had fallen down, they were not chanting 16 rounds actually. And they were debated, they all stopped their 16 rounds. So, it was not because, you know, the regulative principles was a problem. The problem was they stopped 16 rounds of chanting. Okay, because that is the only one thing that is you are expected to do. Rest of the things you are not expected to do, not expected to follow. You know, the four agreed principles, these are four things. But there is only one thing that you are supposed to follow, which is your 16 rounds. That is your commitment to the spiritual master, right? So on a long-term basis, now see, again, it does not mean that I would not say that Gaudiya Maharaj and Vibhu Chaitanya Prabhu, or, you know, from any other disciple of Prabhupada who has been instructed like that, they probably did not chant, you know, Krishna's name. I think they were chanting Krishna's name also. So it is, see, because the philosophy is that it is not about the quantity of the holy name, it is about the quality. Now we know that Gaurdwain Maharaj was such a very exalted Vaishnava. In fact, many devotees felt that he was at the state of Bhava, you know, when he left the planet. He was very exalted devotee, very, very advanced. And even outside ISKCON also, he had a lot of fame and reputation. Many Gaurdwain Maharaj devotees respected him a lot. And he was like an acharya of ISKCON, during his time. So Gaurdwain Maharaj, Prabhupada, the day he met him for the first time, he told him that, you just join and I will give you sannyas. And Gaurdwain Maharaj actually wanted to take sannyas. So he felt that, this is actually the real spiritual master because he knows my desire, he knows my heart. So, when Prabhupada, he was trying to, Gaurdwain Maharaj was trying to enter Prabhupada's room, one of his servants was stopping him and he said, saying that, you're not allowed and you're not supposed to go at this time and Prabhupada is not meeting anyone. And then but still, he somehow went and, somehow the devotee disciple went and said Prabhupada, how come, a junior like him easily, entered and he met you? So Prabhupada said, who is junior? He is a devotee since birth and you have just joined now. So actually, Gaurdwain Maharaj, right from the beginning, he was a Gaudiya Vaishnava devotee, right from the beginning, from his birth. He was raised in a Gaudiya Vaishnava family. So Prabhupada knew all these things, obviously. That's the reason maybe, he was exceptional. Because he knew that Gaurdwain Maharaj, see, it's not just about external chanting. It's not about 16 rounds of chanting. It is about chanting or remembering Krishna throughout the day. And, I will tell you one thing very interesting. It's not about, Krishna does not say, Antakale cha maam evam kirtanam mukta kalevaram. Right? What does he say? Smaranam mukta kalevaram. That the remembrance at the time of death, is going to take us back to Godhead. So because, why it is remembrance? Why it is not chanting? Because, now, in Kali Yuga, we know that chanting is the Yudh Dharma. So how, then chanting has to be there, right? Krishna should say that whoever chants my name, will come back to me. But he's not saying chanting, He's saying that remembrance, whoever will remember me, will come back to me. Why is he saying that? Anyone knows? Why does he say like that?
Who's saying like that, Prabhuji?
Krishna says, no? In the Bhagavad Gita. Anikalaita mameva smaranam mukta kalayaram. Whoever remembers me at the time of death will come back to me.
Because at the time of death, Prabhuji, it's possible that we may not have the physical ability by any chance to chant. But at least the consciousness can be connected to that.
Yeah. So, if one is dumb, he cannot speak and he cannot chant. So then what will he do? He will chant internally, which means that he will do mantric chanting. So it is not about just, externally chanting the holy name. It is all about internal development of Krishna consciousness. And that the spiritual master probably would know, that how far a devotee has gone. So remembrance, the ultimate goal of chanting is also to remember Krishna. If you cannot remember Krishna when you are chanting, then what is the use of your chanting? Right? Does it make sense? If your attention is not there, when you are chanting.
So all the processes are actually aimed to situate your consciousness in Krishna. Basically, that is the requirement. Na?
So this is what Rupa Goswami says in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Samrita Sindhu. Everything, all the goal of everything is to always remember Krishna and to never forget him. The essence of everything. Now, it's a different thing that how do you remember Krishna? That's also another thing. Because one can remember Krishna with lust, with envy, with pride. So many factors are there. So the more of how you remember Krishna, that is also important. So Prabhupada writes in one purport in the Bhagavatam, which I shared also in the group. He says that, and I think, we have discussed this in your house, about, I think it was Neeraj Prabhu who asked this question that, you know, during the Mahabharata war, you know, how did Krishna, like, I think he asked something about how did the other, why did the Narayani Sena, they were at the side of the Kauravas, you know, what happened to them? So, if you remember, you know, I was explaining this point that Prabhupada mentions, you know, he explains that whoever saw Krishna and remembered Krishna, if they developed appreciation for Krishna by seeing him, even if on the opposite side, if they develop appreciation for the Lord, then they went to his abode. And those who are, even though they saw the Lord, but they were envious of the Lord, they attained Sayujya Mukti. So, although they saw the Lord, probably they remembered the Lord, but in what mood they remember the Lord, that is also important. According to that, you get a different result. So, if you remember the Lord favorably, then you go back to his abode. And this is obviously, this is applicable only for Krishna. You know, only he can liberate. You know, with Vishnu it is very rare. But only Krishna, when Krishna will kill someone, then he will, or Krishna or his associates, if they kill someone, then definitely they are liberated. So either they attain Sayujya Mukti or they will go back to God. Right, so this remembrance of the Lord is most important. Now,
you said that only it is applicable for Krishna. So if Narayan kills someone, so they will not get liberation?
No. Narayan cannot. So, exceptional cases, Narayan can actually give Sayujya Mukti, but he cannot actually, generally he does not give Sayujya Mukti. He cannot. Only Krishna can give. So that's the reason Jiva Goswami in Sandarbha explains, when Lord Narasimha came, did Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu go back to Godhead? No. Did they merge in the Brahman effulgence? No. They were elevated. So what the Narayan expansions will do? They will elevate the soul, which means that they get a better destination in the next life. So Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu were promoted to the form of Ravana and Kumbhakarna. Okay, and so obviously, you know, they had more facilities and for enjoyment and all that. And they can also go to Swarga. So, you know, some demons can go to Swarga by the, if they are killed by Vishnu. But they cannot be liberated. Only Krishna's form can liberate them. So that is the most excellent quality of Krishna. Okay, only he can liberate the demons. Krishna does not only give liberation, but he also gives prema. So even if Narayan can give liberation in some cases, but he does not give prema. Okay, so Narayan generally means Rama, Narasimha and all other Vara and all other incarnations.
So, Kamsa got liberation?
Huh?
Kamsa Mama, did he get the liberation?
Yeah, he attained the Sarupya form of the Lord, because, see, he was very envious of Krishna, so, you know, he was, right from the beginning, he was just, so, that's the reason Bhagavatam, you know, now this is very interesting stuff, because, see, this kind of absorption is required. So that's the reason Narad Muni also says that, you know, so he's like discouraging Vaidhi Bhakti, and he says that one should have that kind of absorption, which, so even if, like, you know, even demons like Kamsa, Shishupal and others, they attained the destination of the Supreme Lord because their absorption was far greater than those who worship the Lord with awe and reverence. And what to speak of the devotees who spontaneously worship the Lord. Right? So, the absorption is most important. Now, so the lust and envy, you know, because they are constantly thinking of Krishna. Constantly thinking of the Lord. So, you know, obviously envy and because of envy and anger, you know, they were just thinking of the Lord for 24 hours a day. So that kind of absorption is encouraged. So now obviously anything which is non-favorable, not favorable for loving service to Krishna is definitely not bhakti. It is an imitation of bhakti. But here the point is that kind of absorption has to be it has to be inculcated in a devotee. So that should be the aim, that this is how we want to be absolved, but in a positive way, in a favorable way. That is the message of Rupa Goswami. Anya Bilasudha Sunyam, Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam, Anukuliyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Rutama. So this Anukuliyena Krishnanu Shilanam is actually the Swarup Lakshan of Uttama Bhakti. Swarup Lakshan means that which is permanent. It's the dominant factor for performing pure devotional service. That element has to be there. And Anya Bilasita Sunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam, this is the tathasta lakshan of that characteristic of pure devotional service, because even though you do not have that characteristic, but still you can, you can cultivate, uttama bhakti, sadhana bhakti when you perform. You might have desires in the beginning, but then, you overcome those desires later on by the association of devotees. So, but this anukulena, the favorable attitude towards Krishna, and towards Krishna, or directed towards Krishna, or towards his incarnations. So, shilanam is basically continuously absorption or service for Krishna, favorably disposed. So, this is a Swarup Lakshan, which means that this is actually the most important element for performing devotional service. Without this, you cannot say that it's a pure devotional service. Okay? So, coming back to the point of remembrance, everything, ultimately we have to remember Krishna. But, see now again, this is a tricky thing. It's a very confusing thing also. Because yes, there is no doubt that you have to remember Krishna. But the Shastric intention is also that you have to please Krishna. Pleasing Krishna is actually the ultimate goal. So there are certain things which you have to know what the Lord wants from you. So if the Lord does not want you to remember Him, but if He wants you to do some service for Him, then that has to be, that should be given first priority. So that activity will supersede. Okay. So that's the reason, Prabhupada did not encourage so much that, devotees, they chant 64 rounds in isolation and, become Bhajanandis. So his focus was more on preaching and, being a Goshtanandi and contributing for the mission of spreading Krishna consciousness like that. So his main focus was that. And in doing that service, many times, for example, when this Vrindavan temple construction was going on, so devotees, they were not able to remember Krishna because they were so much caught up in all these external so-called material activities that obviously if they remember Krishna, they could not perform their material duties, the duties given by the spiritual master properly. So then, for them, one disciple asked Prabhupada that, Prabhupada, I came here to, roam around and, to chant Krishna's name and to, be in the spirit of the Goswamis and, to relish the pastimes of Krishna and to relish the Dham. But here I am, just counting the cement bags and, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. So Prabhupada said, for you, chanting is counting the number of cement bags. So keep doing that. Okay, so ultimately it's all decided by the spiritual master, what activity has to be done at what point of time. And that becomes, so that will lead to smaranam. Okay, and if the smaranam does not come, then it will come because Krishna reveals himself. You cannot purchase Krishna by a smaranam also. See now, there may be many devotees who might be just trying to remember Krishna. That's the only thing that they are doing. But if they are not following the Guru's instructions, then even though they remember, but by the time of that, Krishna will not appear before them. Okay. And those who have followed the Guru's instruction, they have pleased the Guru, even though they were not able to remember the Lord, at the time of that, Krishna will personally come for them. Like, you know, as Prabhupada says, that just keep distributing the books, Lord Chaitanya will personally come and pick you up. So, this is very important. Right? I mean, you know, unless it is like revealed to you from the Lord directly that this is what you are supposed to do, then you can do that and you can just chant and you can just remember the Lord, you know, completely. But if you are not on that stage, then it is always, it's always 100% safe to follow the instructions of the Guru. Right? So this is what actually, you know, this is actually Prabhupada's, you know, see, that is the reason this Shastra is very confusing. It's full of contradictions. Then, so we say Guru Shadu Shastra. But all the three are very confusing and contradiction. They have contradictions. Like you quote, you know, you say Prabhupada's particular views on a particular topic, you will find like, you know, he has given multiple views and these are all like contradicting each other. You will find Shastra also does the same thing. And then Sadhu also will do the same thing. So then you will think that, you know, what is the use of following Guru Shastra? So everyone is confusing me. Okay, but actually, and this, see, why this confusion is there? Okay, anyone knows why this multiple statements, multiple, you know, ways of dealing, you know, why this is there? Anyone can answer this? Why there is no single, you know, an absolute instruction for each and every devotee? Why? Anyone can guess?
It may appear contradictory, Prabhuji, but maybe the special reason is that it is trying to align with Krishna's wish over our wish or something like that.
Yeah, but what is the fundamental principle behind this? Why it is different for different devotees, disciples? Now, I mean, obviously there are general statements, there are general things to be done, but you know, there are also many, many, you know, different contradictory instructions about the same point. So Shastra also does that and Guru also does that. Why? Okay, now tell me one thing. Let's take this in a reverse way. Let's assume that if everyone had the same instruction to follow, then what would happen?
Then there will be no difference of opinion. Everybody will be on the same.
Yeah. So what does that mean? No different opinion means? Everyone is one.
One. Well,
I have philosophy.
Seriously.
Right? So, in order to preserve the individuality of a particular soul, you know, and because Krishna is full of variety, you know, so he is exchanging variety and rasa with different devotees in different infinite ways, you know. So if you say that everything, you know, everyone, all the devotees, they should all behave only in one way. They should have only one goal and they should only do one thing. Then how will Krishna enjoy? It will become boring for him. So he also likes variety, right?
So it is for Krishna's pleasure, basically.
Yeah, so, you know, the variety is there because Krishna has, you know, made individuals. So in the Prabhupada said many times that different opinion will exist because we are all individuals, nothing wrong in that. But it's all reconciled in Krishna's service. You know, the objective has to be served. So, yeah, so that is the reason different people, different devotees, they have different instructions because they are at different levels, they are different, you know, stature of devotees. So definitely, you know, and Krishna will he's, you know, he's, when he's dealing with us, you know, he's like enjoying with each and every devotee, because he knows what is the drawback and what is the anartha of each and every devotee and what is the advancement of each and every devotee. So depending on that, you know, he's like making multiple statements. Okay, so I hope this makes sense. And that's the reason, you know, Prabhupada also had this characteristic, because he's also the Acharya. He's representing the Lord, and because the Lord is, you know, he likes variety, he wants variety. So, you know, the Acharya also has to present that. And you know, obviously the Acharya can understand the devotion of a disciple, and depending on that, he will instruct. So, like, you know, there was one, there is one prostitute. Prabhupada said she is a great devotee of Krishna, Kanchi Kamini. You know, her name was Kanchi Kamini. So, you know, in the night she used to do the duties, you know, whatever, prostitution and all that. But in the morning, you know, everything she will do. She will do aarti and puja of the Lord, and she will serve the Lord very diligently. So she was fixed in her service to the Lord. Although, you know, she had this, she might have this anartha or whatever you say. But Prabhupada said she was a great devotee. So it is like, you know, every individual is different. And that's the reason, you know, it's difficult to say. You know, I think, you know, a spiritual master is in a better situation to say that who will go back to Godhead, which of his disciples, you know, if he knows them properly. So that is the reason, see, that is the reason we have this parampara system, and it does not end with Prabhupada. You know, it is a continuous process. Like, you know, we are the ones who are not, like, you know, my Guru Maharaj will not even probably know about me unless he hears about me from other disciples, you know. So then he can probably make a better judgment about whether I will go back to God or not. Okay, and like, or you know, maybe if he's directly... you know, he's directly inspired by Krishna, you know, then definitely that's a different thing. But in general, you know, when he hears from other disciples, then actually he knows that, okay. So the most intimate devotees in contact with you, they are the ones who are actually able to understand. Provided they are also at an advanced stage, and they are also shastrically sound, and they have that, you know, knowledge and everything, that foundation is there. So these are, you know, so all these knowledge will, you know, will come from understanding and reading and understanding Prabhupada books. And that's how we actually, now you have been able to relate what I'm saying, you know, like, because we have been conducting these classes and all that since a long time. So you are able to actually make a discrimination, and, you know, you can get a clear picture what is happening here. Otherwise, it's very difficult to predict, you know, immediately, you know, now, like, you know, if you tell a neophyte that this prostitute is a devotee, they will not understand that. It's a very complex thing. Like, you can't appreciate a prostitute as a devotee. You can't appreciate a gambler as a devotee. But, you know, there may be gamblers who are also devotees. And, you know, yeah, I mean, you know, so for a neophyte devotee, very difficult to understand these things. Like, you know, okay, another thing, you know, even for devotees also. Now, see, in the Bhagavatam, it is mentioned that the Krishna had prostitutes in Dwarka, and they were all devotees. So now the question is that how come prostitutes are there in Dwarka, which is non-different from the spiritual world?
Correct. Why would not be able to understand why there is a need for such a profession in a place like Dwarka?
Yeah, but Prabhupada explained that in his purport. So you know, devotees can get bewildered, you know, that how this... But it is, see, once you advance in spiritual life, once you have that sambandh gyan, you know, and you know the process of bhakti, you know, the dynamics of the devotee relationship with the Lord, after hearing from sadhus and going through the scriptures, then you will be able to actually understand that, yeah, there is no problem. You know, even the prostitutes are, and Prabhupada explained, actually, even though they were prostitutes, that they were never engaged in any illicit activity. Because, you know, they were just kept like that, in just to follow, just to set an example for other kings in other countries, that, you know, it is necessary to have prostitutes so that the, you know, population, you know, will be controlled, like, you know, the, because, you know, like, as Arjuna is actually telling Krishna that, you know, what will be the consequence of the war, you know, that, if women are not protected, and, you know, if they have this kind of thing, then the generations that come from that, they will be degraded. And so it will actually degrade the entire nation and the community. So in order to prevent that thing to happen, in order to protect that, there are prostitutes which are kept in Dwarka, or I mean, Dwarka is just to set an example. But, you know, the message that Krishna is passing is that each and every state, you know, or every king, you know, if they have prostitutes, then then things will be controlled. Like, because, you know, because the main tendency is that they want to have sex a number of times with multiple women. That's the natural tendency of a man. Okay, and in order to avoid having multiple illicit sex activities, so there are women who are, you know, controlling that factor. I mean, kind of difficult to understand at this stage, but these are certain precautions which are taken so that it will not degrade the society later on. So anyways, you know, but these prostitutes, they are actually eternal associates of Krishna. And they are just doing a duty, you know, like playing a role in Krishna's pastime. But they never had any kind of connection with any other men. Okay, so that is obviously understood. So, you know, so only by the, by hearing the, you know, acharyas, we can actually understand what is Krishna Leela, what is Bhakta Leela, you know, because everything is the dynamics between the Supreme Lord, the devotee, and the devotion. And then only we'll be able to actually make a judgment, you know. Now, okay, one more thing comes to my mind, you know, with regards to this, is that Prabhupada was, you know, he was traveling somewhere, and he was with his disciples. So they were just going somewhere, and somehow they happened to come across a temple, small temple. So then Prabhupada and disciples went inside, and he was, you know, they saw that, you know, this pujari, he was like offering worship to the Lord, but at the same time he was also like chewing pan, and, you know, he was like that place was very unkempt, it was not clean, and but still the pujari was like, you know, offering aarti and all that, and at the same time was also doing certain other things. Okay, so after, you know, the entire thing, because Prabhupada was there for the entire aarti, and after he left, so the disciples complained to Prabhupada that, you know, what kind of standard he's following, that is, you know, the temple is not clean and he is worshipping in his own way. And Prabhupada said, immediately cut him off. You know, he said that actually this pujari is a very nice devotee of the Lord. And so Prabhupada said that I have given the standard and etiquette to you. It is not that everyone will follow that. So the deity worship standard Prabhupada gave to his disciples. It's not necessary that others will also be following that. So now see, Prabhupada actually, and Prabhupada also made a comment that I observed him carefully, and, you know, he was absorbed in his worship. So Prabhupada said that he is a nice devotee of the Lord. So you see, these things, you know, we cannot understand, because it requires proper vision, you know, proper vision through the hearing process of Guru Shadu Shastra. Then only actually we can understand certain things, certain tattva of spiritual life. Right? So any comment, any question on this? Yeah, Anju Mataji and Sanjeev Prabhu and Garan, any comment? If he has any comment or question.
No, probably no comment.
Yeah, anyways. So here, okay. Anyways, but here I'm not giving any concession to the devotees, or, you know, Prabhupada is not giving concession to anyone here by sharing these kind of examples, you know, but it just broadens the purview of devotional service, the purview of devotion, that we are not supposed to judge others, you know, because we are not in that particular situation. And it's difficult to predict about certain things unless we are in an authoritative position. Okay. Okay, any, Nirvika, you have any comment or question?
No, probably.
Yeah, okay. So, okay, now other thing I wanted to mention is, see, regarding back to Garud also, so what I've, you know, heard from these memories is, yeah, something really interesting. Now, this, see, one time, there was one elderly person. So, Prabhupada, I think he was visiting Kerala. And this is the first time in Kerala, probably. And this elderly person, he wanted to meet Prabhupada. He wanted to greet him. And, like, you know, he was not a devotee, you know, like, as in terms of, like, following and all that. But elderly gentleman, he just wanted to meet Prabhupada. So, it was... I forgot the name of the disciple, but yeah, it was, I think, yeah, it was, this is shared by Atma Tattva Prabhu, who is Prabhupada disciple, Indian Prabhupada disciple. So he actually says that one time one elderly gentleman came to him and, you know, he wanted to meet Prabhupada. So he made arrangement so he could meet Prabhupada. He was quite old when he met Prabhupada. So he went inside Prabhupada's room and, just by seeing Prabhupada, somehow, you know, he just asked him that, Prabhupada, can I chant the holy name? And then, so Prabhupada said, yeah, of course. So do you know the Mahamantra? And he said, yes, I know. And then he started chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. And then he asked Prabhupada, so Prabhupada, can you teach me how do I chant the holy name? And so Prabhupada took his chanting beads, and Prabhupada chanted, I think he chanted like, more than one round or something on his bead. And he gave him back and he taught him how to chant the holy name. So actually, indirectly, Prabhupada initiated him. Okay. And what happened? This gentleman, you know, he, after a few weeks, he passed away. And when, you know, devotees inquired about his health and well-being, then, you know, his relatives told them that, actually, in the last few days, he was only chanting the entire day. He was only chanting. He was not doing anything else. And they even mentioned the point that in the last 2-3 days, he did not even go to the toilet. He was just chanting the holy name throughout. And the last thing that they heard from him was the holy name. And they also saw the chanting bead on his hand. That's how he passed away. So now, see what happened. Just a matter of movement associated with Prabhupada, this person somehow developed great taste for the holy name. And I think, you know, the way he went away, he went back to Godhead. So what sadhana he did? How much sadhana he did? Right? So, but, you know, it seems that he went back to Godhead because he was just chanting the holy name. And then that's the, you know, the relatives also said, you know, that the last thing that they heard was chanting the holy name only with the bead bag, you know. So, such a glorious passing away. So, obviously, he must have gone back to Godhead, no doubt. So now Prabhupada probably also knew that this guy is going to go away. No, so he just initiated him, although he did not formally, you know, conduct the ceremony, but, you know, he just initiated. So yeah, this is, you know, this is another, you know, very interesting thing. And one more thing, so about, you know, Prabhupada, is that so now, you know, one of his disciples, you know, so he was like thinking that, you know, so now actually this was, I think this was in Vrindavan, and he was so they were all like chanting in the association of Prabhupada, and somehow Prabhupada, like, you know, he felt asleep. And so this devotee, after some time, you know, he was feeling that how can a spiritual master or acharya sleep? Because I have heard that a spiritual master never sleeps. He's always like Krishna conscious. And then what happened? In the moment he thought that, Prabhupada suddenly, he said, nonsense. And then, you know, he told him that chant attentively, something like that, he said. So he immediately realized that actually Prabhupada was awake. Although he was like dozing, but he was awake. So see, this is actually the nature of our transcendentalist. Like they are, although they might be sleeping externally, but they are always internally, they are absorbed. And because they are in direct communication with Krishna, so at the right time things are revealed. So, you know, I mean, so see, that very reason I say that chanting is an internal affair. It is not about external thing. It's an internal affair. And the only thing, the only objective of a, you know, devotee or a servant of Prabhupada is basically to please Prabhupada. That should be the only motive. That is the only desire a devotee should have. Then everything will come automatically. There is no need for, you know, like there is no need of rushing. So everything comes automatically. Yeah, so this is also one of the, you know, nice thing that I heard. And then one more thing. Yeah, so, you know, regarding coming, falling down to the from the spiritual world. Now, see, this is so interesting. The Prabhupada, what does he say? You know, when one returns to Krishna, does he fall down to the material world? What does Krishna say? Janma karma chame divyam divam yo veti takvatam takva deham punar janma meti ma meti so arjuna. So if one goes back to the Lord, does he come back again? So then another Bhagavad Gita verse, Krishna says, A Brahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartina Arjuna Mahamupatita Konteya Punar Janmana Vidyate. So again Krishna at the end says, Punar Janmana Vidyate. That right from the Brahma Lok to this material world, everyone has to take birth again. But one who comes to me does not come back in this world. So, does one come back to the material world?
Prabhuji, this question has been going on since such a long time. Nobody knows the answer for it.
Huh?
And I'm saying, this question has been going on since such a long time. Nobody has yet got a, like, a proper, like, satisfactory answer for it, right?
Yeah, so... Yeah, but what do you think? Like, one can come back or not? What have you heard about this?
Sure.
Generally, like, devotees must have explained to you, right? Even I have told that one will not come back because this is Krishna's endurance. So, other devotees, are you there? Haribol? I think they have got disconnected probably.
Am I 11 minutes?
Everyone got disconnected or what?
Okay, so I just got a clarification from Manju Matari that it was not Gaurgoin Maharaj who asked for exemptions, but it was that foreign devotee who was not able to manage. Okay. Yeah, because I could not hear properly because there was, I think, some distance between her and the phone. Okay, so I think they got disconnected. Maybe probably they have reached home and maybe they'll probably join back. But the answer is that, you know, when Prabhupada was asked this question, what did Prabhupada say? Anyone knows?
What did he say, Prabhuji? Tell
me. Yeah, Prabhupada said that yes, one can fall back also. And then this disciple asked Prabhupada that, but Prabhupada, you know, like Krishna is himself saying that no one is going to fall, no one will fall back, one they will return. And you know what Prabhupada said? Prabhupada said, when Krishna is saying that, it means that practically it will not happen.
What is that supposed to mean?
Huh?
What is that supposed to mean? What does it mean that practically it will not happen?
Means generally it will not happen. but one can fall.
Okay.
So, I think, you know, Prabhupada said like this because he wanted to somehow he just wanted to back up his statement that, you know, he said that we are coming from Krishna. I think in that particular, in order to support that thing, you know, I think he said like that. Otherwise, see, if he had said that no, there is no chance that one can fall down, then, you know, the thing that is said about one coming from the spiritual world, that is invalidated. So he said, you know, that practically it does not happen, but he also said that, you know, okay, it can happen. So, these are all like very interesting stuff, the Prabhupada. We probably must have heard about many, many things which are very general in nature from devotees. But if you hear about Prabhupada's memories, you know, his leelas and all, then you'll find, you know, very, very interesting thing Prabhupada did. One more very, very interesting thing is... two things I wanted to share. Okay, so the first thing is that when Prabhupada was asked by a disciple that, so, you know, he was thinking that, okay, you know, because Prabhupada said that one should not take food, outside food, okay, and unless it is offered to Krishna, and that the person who makes is a devotee, one should not accept that food. So there were a group of devotees, devotees were there, and they went, and probably they had some outside food. In some certain situation, circumstance, I think, you know, I don't exactly remember. But when one disciple went to Prabhupada, and he was like, you know, he had this doubt that, you know, what they have done is right or wrong. So he went to Prabhupada and he asked him that, you know, is this okay? And the Prabhupada said that actually everything is Krishna's prasad, ultimately. Okay, and then he also said to that disciple that you should not preach like that to anyone. Because if you do that, then, you know, it will give liberty to the devotees to eat outside. Okay, so so this was a very broad view, broad vision of Prabhupada. And I think this is a vision of Uttama Adhikari, you know, that everything is Krishna's prasad, because that is actually the reality. But at our stage, in order to advance in spiritual life, we cannot see that as everything, you know, as Krishna's prasad. Neither we can also consume that. Okay, obviously, principally we know, theoretically we know that everything is Krishna's prasad only. Whatever food is available in the entire world, it is all Krishna's, it is coming from Krishna. So it is Krishna's prasad only. Okay, and he is the supreme manager of everything. So everything has to be coming from him by his sanction. So, you know, obviously, ultimately, everything is Krishna's prasad. But Prabhupada wants to make sure that, you know, the devotees, they do not consume, outside food. You know, which is like in some exceptional cases might be there, but one thing, you know, this is one thing. And second thing is, I think, you know, we discussed this earlier also, that during Ram Navami, like, you know, Prabhupada said that it should be followed, observed in the same way as Lord Chaitanya's appearance, which means that it should,
fasting,
you know, the fasting should be, yeah. So now the question is that why Prabhupada, then why we have this, you know, breaking at noon?
Hmm.
In all of his lectures and letters and his conversations, you know, Prabhupada always said that it should be observed by, you know, as same as Lord Chaitanya. So then why are we breaking at noon time? So other devotees, they have joined back or not?
Hello, Hare Krishna.
Oh, okay, yeah. You got disconnected, like, did you reach?
Yeah, because you have to park the car and then leave the other.
So why, you know, we break at noon time?
Why do we break what?
Why do we break the fast at noon time for Lord Ramchandra's appearance? So when Prabhupada said, you know, that it should be observed in a similar way as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Not only that, but, you know, we consume normal prasadam instead of Ekadashi prasadam. So generally, you know, the principle is that for Vishnu Tattvas, one should break the fast by having Ekadashi Prasad, but not the regular ones. So then, why for Lord Ramchandra, Nityanand Prabhu's appearance, Balram's appearance, why do we break with the regular Prasad? You see, Narasimha Chaturdasi, we break with Ekadashi fast. Janmashtami also Ekadashi fast. Janmashtami Ekadashi fast, I think, you know, that is like logical, you know, because next day is Prabhupada's appearance. So the fasting should continue, I believe. And that's why So you break the fast also, you don't break also, like that, you know. So, in-between situation. So that's the reason we have Ekadashi fast. But in general, for Vishnu Tattvas, you know, we are supposed to observe Ekadashi fasting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appearance also, you see, it's Ekadashi fasting. So why do we have this? Okay, anyways, you know, so I think, you know, what the GBC and the Satvik committee, you know, they did some research and they came to a conclusion that so why do we break at noon is because that's what Prabhupada did. So it's very interesting, you know. He shared about fasting till dusk for Lord Ramchandra. But when Prabhupada was personally present with his disciples, he broke the fast at noon. And they had regular prasadam also. So, you know, again, very interesting. Like, so that's the reason, you know, like just following the example of Prabhupada, you know, like we break the fast of Lord Ramchandra. And obviously, another principle is that, you know, the... Yeah, I mean, you know, the other principle is that we break the fast at the appearance of the Lord, at the time of appearance of the Lord. So, in terms of Lord Ramchandra, the appearance is at noon, that we know. And for other, Narasimha Dev appeared, you know, at the dusk time, we know that. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also, we know what time he appeared. So, that's why we again, you know, break the fast. But it is Ekadashi, but in Lord Ramchandra's case, it is non-Ekadashi. But because just because Prabhupada observed it, non-Ekadashi, you know, like we are following that example. Another, see, now very important principle. There is something really very, very important. Okay. But before that, let me just finish about Balram's, you know, why do we have in Nityananda Prabhu Balram's, you know, thing. Why do we have, like, you know, because the timing of appearance of Balram and Nityananda Prabhu is not known. And that's the reason, you know, we break at noon. Okay. So, yeah. Yeah, now coming to the, you know, coming back to the principle, the most important principle in observing things, whether it is Ekadashi, whether it is what time and all that, the intention is, the highest intention of the Shastra is that finally it depends on the Guru. The Guru is the one who will decide what time one should break and what one should consume. This is very interesting. So in spite of having Shastric intentions about observing fasting, there is an intention which says that finally everything depends on the Guru. If the Guru asks you to consume non-Ekadashi Prasad, then you can also have non-Ekadashi. And the Guru is asking you to break the fast, then you know, you can break the fast early also. Very interesting, right? So you see, again, you know, the ultimate principle is that the Guru is the authority for everything. So this is what they have done research on the paper, you know, about this topic. And this point is mentioned there that, you know, the Guru is the one who is actually going to decide. Now see, now one practical example, one live example of this is that generally in Chopadi temple, Narasimha Chaturdashi, they will break the fast with regular prasad. But in our Jew temple, Niravar temple, or other temples, they break fast with Ekadashi prasad. So I asked this question to Damodar Prabhu, you know, and why it is like this, you know, because everyone is observing, you know, then why the Chopadi temple is making exception to this. So he said that normally when you serve Ekadashi Prasad, you must feast devotees the next day. And because for Narasimha appearance day, next day you are not feasting, that's the reason you do not provide Ekadashi Prasad. Okay. So this is a very valid point, you know. And so you see with Lord Chaitanya's appearance, so because next day is Jagannath Mishra festival, where there is feasting. So that's the reason in Chopadi you will find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's appearance, they serve Ekadashi Prasad. Okay. But I think this Narasimha Chaturdashi festival, if I remember, it was Ekadashi Prasad at Chopadi. I don't remember, like, I'm not sure, but it was Ekadashi. And And I think, you know, they made Ekadasi because just for the sake of avoiding any kind of confusion amongst devotees. So, but you know, there are like, you know, multiple intentions of a Shastra about a particular thing. And then one should be able to find the conclusion from that according to time and circumstance. So that he is an Acharya. Acharya is the one who actually, you know, he can reconcile all these things, and he also comes with a conclusion according to time and circumstance. So it is like you observe also, like, you know, for example, Ambarish Maharaj's example from the Bhagavatam. So as you know that, you know, he was supposed to fast, but because the Parayana time was there, he had to break also. So now, knowing the fact that, you know, he has to wait for Durvasa Muni, and at the same time he has to break the fast. So what he did? What he did?
He took the little water, the size of a mustard seed, and he just did that, right?
Yeah, so he broke the fast with the water, because water, yeah, if you have water, it does not break the fast. Okay, so that is a specialty. And at the same time, it is also broken because it was a Nirjal fasting. So it was simultaneously both purposes were served. You know, he satisfied Durvasa Muni, although he was not satisfied, that's a different thing. But he did not break the fast, and he also broke the fast like that. So this is called, you know, trying to reconcile, like how to satisfy, you know, simultaneously. So that is the, that only a pure devotee can actually reconcile and come to a conclusion. So we just try to follow in the footsteps of our acharyas, and, you know, that's how we understand what is the higher purpose. How to find a higher purpose. And see, that's what happened in Mahabharata also. When Ashwatthama was captured by Arjun, so that time, you know, Arjun was saying something, Bhim was saying something, Draupadi was saying something, Yudhishthir Maharaj was saying something. And then, what did Krishna tell Arjun? Yeah, Bhim wanted to kill, you know, he said that we should kill, even though he's a son of our guru or he's a brahmana, still we should kill. Draupadi was very compassionate, so as a woman. So she said, no, we should not kill our own guru's son. So Krishna said to Arjun, you know, he looked at Arjun and he said, we should satisfy both. And so then Arjun understood what he's supposed to do then. You know, he did not get bewildered. So he knew what he should do, and then he cut off the hair of Ashwatthama, and that served both purpose, because it is, in the Shastra it is mentioned that if you cut the hair of a person, a Shatri or, you know, whoever is a attacker, then you kill him. Technically you kill him because his reputation is lost. So if a person's reputation is lost, you know, then he is a dead person. Okay. And at the same time, you know, he was alive. So both purposes were solved by Arjun. So this is Krishna consciousness. No, very difficult. Unless we hear from acharyas, we serve them submissively with humility, it's not going to be revealed to us, all these things. So very, very, you know, so that's why, you know, we must have training for this. We must understand how to respond to situations. Okay, so I'm quite late now, 11. Anyways, you know, I have more interesting stuff to share, but we'll continue later. And I hope, you know, devotees can make it on Sunday, you know, for the house program. So, you know, I wanted to speak about Leela. Okay, apart from the, you know, Siddhanta and Tattva and all, all the contradictions and all. And you'll also find a lot of contradiction in Krishna Leela. So we'll again come to the contradiction thing, but it, you know, it will be like, I will try to focus more on Leela. So generally, you know, I want to make sure that devotees have understood the tattva properly first. Then see, once the field is soiled and grounded properly, then there is a different taste and enjoyment in building, you know, in building the, planting the tree, you know, in like building the tree. So you actually can relish the fruits very nicely if the foundation is there, you know. Otherwise, it's a unstable thing. And another thing is that, you know, I want to start Chaitanya Charitamrita now, but my only condition is that, so I want that every devotee should take this as a Bhakti Vaibhav, or maybe Bhakti Vedanta, or maybe, you know, Bhakti Sarvabhauma, or whatever you say. Then only devotees, you know, should attend, because I don't want any, like, you know, after joining the class, you know, there is attendance has to be like 100%, not only 75%, because Madhya Leela is a very advanced topic, Madhya Leela and Antya Leela. Now, you know, actually, technically, those who have not learned Adi Leela, they should not even go to Madhya Leela, because, you know, the main stuff is there in the Adi Leela. But still, you know, seeing the sincerity of the devotees and, you know, their eagerness and mainly their commitment for the classes and, you know, their attitude, you know, obviously we can make some, you know, adjustment in that. But I want to make sure that, you know, if you want to start CC, then I don't want to hear, I cannot attend, I couldn't attend, this, that, you know, it will happen, you know, I do agree, you know, like sometimes it will happen. So traveling outside, then obviously it will happen. But what I'm, you know, trying to say is that if it is clashing with something, so I don't want to hear that, well, you know, because we went to attend this seminar, that seminar, this Guru Maharaj came, this, you know, sannyasi came. No. If the sannyasi is your siksha guru, your diksha guru, and if you have some service, then I'm okay with that, you know, then it's okay. But if it's just another seminar or just another, you know, class, then I don't think, you know, it's really important to attend. Because, so here everyone is like, you know, see, I'm also trying to share, and everyone is trying to share, and then we are all trying our best to help devotees. So if you are, you know, if you are taking up a particular thing, then you should stick to that thing. And that is very important, you know. So I want to make sure that, you know, devotees will be committed like that. And that will become the first priority for devotees, unless certain exceptions will be there. If you are okay with that, then, you know, like, you can just let me know, and, you know, but, you know, I don't want that, you know, after writing devotees, again the same thing continues, and then again I have to, like, write messages and all. So,
on Mondays only, same time?
See, generally we'll have one particular weekday, you know, like that we can fix. But it's okay, you know, like we can, depending on the devotee's availability. So it should not happen that for one devotee we are changing the day. Or for, you know, if there are like 5-6 devotees, then just for one or two devotees we are changing the day. Like majority should be there.
So some flexibility, like possibly like Monday or Tuesday, some for some time maybe next week can be shifted to next day, or normally we will keep for Monday. So there will be some element of flexibility possible. If prior
intimation, once we fix up a day, that I think then we have to fix up, no? Because we can't keep changing the days. Like, you know, for example, now for you, let's say for you, Tuesday might work, but for some other devotee, Monday might work, right? So then we have to come to a common day for, so that everyone can participate. And once that common day is fixed, then we cannot expect that we can keep changing the days, because then other devotees will not be able to attend.
That means there will be one fixed day, then we keep on that day only every week.
Yeah, so what we will do is, I want like that, you know, all the devotees who are participating, they should have almost 100% attendance. I want that. Now, if someone is sick, someone is not well, that's a genuine reason, then it's okay. If someone, they are out of station, you know, that's a genuine reason. Okay, but attending other programs or attending, you know, going to the temples and all that, that is not going to, like, I won't be able to take that. So we have to prioritize that, because in my experience, and I think you all have experienced also, that if this keeps happening again and again, then, you know, like, what will happen? So, see, because like, somehow I have seriously implemented certain things, that's why at least, you know, at least some devotees are attending regularly, you know, on a more consistent basis. If I did not do that, then what would have happened? I think everyone would have taken that flexibility. And so now I don't want those devotees, you know, who are like not going to commit or who are not going to show that kind of commitment. So I want to filter now, you know, because Q&A, you know, I have allowed, like, okay, you know, you, but like, you know, I cannot allow also at the same time, because if I allow everyone, then everyone will, you know, take that opportunity, that, you know, and then we'll have that, okay, this devotee is not attending, and, you know, then why I have to attend also every time. So that should not come up. And I think, you know, that's the reason I've tried my best to be, you know, like, equal to everyone. And, you know, those who are not able to attend, you know, they have spoken to me, they have shared their circumstances, and, you know, for me, it was, like, quite genuine. So I allowed them, you know. But for CC, you know, I don't want to allow anyone like that. Whether it is 2 devotees, 3 devotees, or 5 devotees, I'm okay. You know, less number, more, much the better. But, you know, if you are targeting a huge number, then definitely that all these problems will creep in. So, yeah, I mean, does this make sense? Like, you know.
You're starting with Madhya Leela, is it?
Yeah, Madhya Leela. I mean, let's say, you know, like, let's see. I mean, I'm not saying that I will start with the next session, but maybe soon, yeah. Probably, maybe by at least by next month, I want to start.
Okay, so that means 1/3 of CC is done, 2/3 is balanced, like that?
Well, 1/3 what?
1/3 of CC has been covered already, now 2/3 balance, 2/3 is there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so, and also, you know, the reason for taking this Q&A questions, session was, like, to make sure that we are also fundamentally, we have become strong. And you know, so everyone can understand the Leela point also. So, yeah, so I think, okay, now, Rajiv Prabhu, you know, you have to submit your assignment, okay? Like, I think most of the devotees have done that.
Okay, probably.
Yeah, so, okay, all right. So, you know, we'll meet on Sunday. You know, Sunday is okay, no? Nirvika, for you also, Sunday works, right?
Yeah, Sunday, but I might just, I have to come back from my Bhakti Vaibhav class, so I'll try to come as early as I can, maybe by 7:30 I'll try to reach.
Okay, and so Rajiv Prabhu and Sandeep Prabhu, you all are confirmed, right? You can also make...
Is it your house, Dabuji?
Yeah, my house only.
Okay, thank you.
And you all can make at 7, right?
Yeah.
So it's okay. Like, you know, we do by 7:15 we'll start. But we can have prasadam, you know, before. So, okay. Theek hai. All right. So, all right. So, thank you for joining. Hare Krishna. Dhanavad pranam to everyone.
Thank you, Dhanavad. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.